What I didn't want was for people to just search on Google for SoundCloud and find a book and then buy it off a sales page. Instead, what I thought would be much better if people know that I'm the go-to guy because I run a label, manage artists, and I have something valuable to say. And then after they read the articles, then of course they buy a book.
Hey, welcome back everyone to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brendan Dunn, and today I'm going to be joined with Boudi Vogt. Again, I always butcher his name, but awesome guy from the Netherlands. We talked a lot about, you know, he runs a recording label consultancy thing, and it's fascinating. I love looking beyond kind of the typical web designer, web developer, copywriter, marketer kind of grouping and look at how other people are successfully charging their clients more, getting better and more premium clients, having systems in place for getting them and everything. So that's what Boudi and I jump into in this interview. But before we get over to the interview, a few things I want to mention. So first off, last episode I talked about how the European conference is coming up very quickly. If you would like to go, I'd love to see you there. It's going to be a very small event, probably less than 100 people. And we've got some great headline speakers. We have a total of 16 speakers. 10 of them are giving headline talks. 6 will be giving kind of like lightning-ish talks. But I can guarantee that every talk that you hear is going to be totally actionable, meaning every talk you will get lessons from it that you can apply directly to your business. And on top of that, this isn't like some, you know, I've been to conferences with thousands of people and the speakers have their little speaker room and you never see them and, you know, everything else. This is, we're literally taking over a small Japanese-inspired resort outside of Stockholm. And all the speakers will be there the whole time. You know, obviously all the attendees will be too. And it will be very intimate. It'll be kind of like going to a little summer camp in a way where, you know, everyone's there in the morning and everyone is there in the evening. What's nice is everything's inclusive. So the food, spa, for instance, there's this amazing spa and hot springs on site. You know, the conference, it's just all you need to do outside of obviously pay the registration is figure out how you're getting to Stockholm and we handle the rest. So I hope you can make it. It's at doubleyourfreelancing.com/EUconf. So go there now, get your ticket. We are more than halfway sold out, so you're going to want to get that soon. All right, so without any more delay, let's get over to the interview with Boudi. Hey, so I want to introduce Boudi Vogt. I know I butchered your last name, Vogt, to the Business of Freelancing. Boudi is in The Hague, I just found out, in the Netherlands. First off, welcome to the Business of Freelancing.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So we're going to be talking about a lot of fun things around kind of validating product or productized consulting ideas and just a whole bunch of stuff that we have lined up for today's talk. But before we jump into all that, tell me a bit about your background, like quick 30-second to a minute kind of snapshot of where you've come from.
Okay. So I am in The Hague, the Netherlands. And I started about 4.5 years ago when I was doing business administration at a university. And I was at Erasmus, a very nice school. But at the time, I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And really, what happened in these years is that I went from discovering acts to managing them, to launching an agency, to launching a record label, and building a roster of these acts that we're managing to the point that they're now at a touring level. And we did that by really working the intersection of digital marketing and the music industry, very much like the new model. And personally, I then also share these experiences on my blog. I wrote a book about SoundCloud and I just launched a course called the Music Marketing Academy.
So was the purpose of kind of mixing digital marketing with a record label to kind of set yourself apart from all the other labels out there? I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know much about the music industry, but I assume a lot of the, I think some of the bigger labels at least, you know, will do a lot of digital marketing and everything for the artists on their label. But is that Is that kind of what you were, like how you set yourself apart?
Well, what happened very much is that like the music industry has been so disrupted by technology that what originally was a very gatekeeper-controlled model where you had specific people like A&Rs, artists and repertoires, or big managers or publishers.
And you need to go audition and like it'd be up to them whether or not, right?
Yeah, exactly. And these guys had a lot of leverage within these big organizations, also called the major labels. And they grew to that stage because of the margins on physical sales. And as those margins started to fall with the disruption of physical, you know, and the big migration towards downloads and streaming, it also meant that the industry really changed. And therefore, what we wanted to do is instead of trying to get our young electronic musicians gigs and releases, instead of trying to do that by convincing the gatekeepers, instead what we wanted to do is really play the online model. And so what we're trying to do as a label is to be at the forefront of that.
Okay. I know one of the things that we discussed before hitting record was this idea of kind of testing the waters before you dive headfirst in. And it sounds like, I mean, you did something that, to I think a lot of people, I mean, obviously you're probably extremely passionate about music and things like that, but to a lot of people looking from the inside or the outside in might think, well, you know, I mean, starting a label, doing this, writing that book. I mean, it sounds like there were a lot of different decisions that had to be made. And if any of them fizzled or if let's say nobody wanted the book, you would have ended up wasting a lot of time. Like, how did you validate kind of each part? Like, you've got a lot of stuff now. You have the course, you have the book, you've got the label, you have like the agency side. How do you guarantee that there would be buyers on the other end?
Right. Okay. So I think this is something a lot of creatives struggle with. And I'll illustrate with a story. So just about 2.5 years ago, we went from managing a few acts, launching that agency, into committing to, hey, we want to launch a record label ourselves. Because we had all these young guys and we're trying to shop them to the gatekeepers, but it wasn't working. Even though they were super good, the leverage simply wasn't there. They didn't have a pre-existing record deal or the statistics. So for us, what initially, how I got into this industry was that two of my best friends started producing music. This was really 5 years ago, you know, like first year of university. And they put this track up on SoundCloud and it got 20,000 plays within a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was the indicator for us. Like, hey, guys, there's opportunity here. We need to do something. So they started an act. I began managing them. And then after I launched the agency with a partner of mine who was 10 years my elder and very much was used to operating in the pre-existing industry model, we tried working that model and chopping him. And we really came to a point where, hey, okay, so this isn't working, but it's not the talent that isn't working. So I think for validating the label, the thing that convinced us of the possibility of doing it initially was, okay, so how do we get into this? What was our point of entry? And it was SoundCloud. So we figured, okay, and we didn't have a track record. It was just the music that was doing well. Plus, we just doubled down on the marketing. We were spending hours every day replying to everyone who put a track up on SoundCloud. And mind you, back in those days, there were like, I don't know, maybe 50,000 users on the platform. So them with the 20,000 plays made them like the top 1%.
So you just went through all the new kind of, I guess, submissions or whatnot, all the new uploads to SoundCloud, and you contacted everyone who had no label? Like, was that your marketing strategy?
Well, at that time, it was really just them as an artist. We didn't have the record label yet.
Okay.
And what we did is not something I would advise to anyone now, but because the platform was new, we actually sat down, you know, we're like, for every upload we found in a similar genre, we placed comments like, hey, I love your track. Please check out mine. It was terrible, really, but it worked for us, combined with the music being good.
I've done things like this. Like, for instance, one of the things I used to do with my software product is I just would Google every single agency. I would look at like those, you know, those CSS gallery websites where agencies would post client work. And I mean, that was my method. And I think you and I would be in complete agreement that getting started, that's probably one of the best ways to do it, because you're not spending a lot on ads. You're not kind of, you can reach out directly without waiting for people to come to you, like waiting for people to Google the right stuff. You can kind of be a little more proactive, right?
Totally. I think back then, you know, like this really isn't advisable. It was just back then that was the only thing we could think of in terms of marketing that we could have done. But I think how that validated the label is because we knew like, hey, okay, with no resources, we managed to pull this off on SoundCloud. Maybe the reason we can't get in with the major labels or a bigger deal or a bigger publisher is because we don't have the leverage. And maybe our best shot at getting the leverage is figuring out a way to successfully do digital music releases. And what's the best way to do that is we start a record label. So that was the move there. And once we noticed that that worked, then for me personally, like I really felt like I wanted to do something in terms of like creating content, writing. I felt like there was stuff we were doing that had to be shared that was not so accessible publicly for artists. And so before I even started my blog, I'd been thinking about, okay, so this SoundCloud thing is working for us. Maybe I should write a book about it. And instead of just starting right away on doing that, what I did is, you know those old landing pages with like a lot of copy on them with like a buy button?
You mean the ones that are like, you know, dear so-and-so from the desk of like the really like long form, really like big, like all caps words and that sort of thing?
Yeah, a little less cheesy, but that's
okay. But a long form sales page, yes.
Yeah. So what I did is, I bought the domain soundcloudguide.com, and I wrote maybe 12,000 words of copy, and I put a PayPal button on there, and basically I sold what I thought that a user would want out of a book about SoundCloud. How do you get more followers? How do you get more plays, etc.? And it was very much really helping me also structure what I were to put in a book if I were to write it, while still being able to validate the idea. I remember I was at the beach with the girl I was then dating, and my phone vibrates. And I'd almost forgotten about the website. I probably put it up like 2-3 weeks beforehand.
Right.
And I get a PayPal.
And you had a sale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so, I'm always trying to tell people, like, the thing that I think everyone should strive for in their life is to get some a sale from somebody that they didn't need to either invoice or kind of, like, ask specifically to pay them. You know, like, in this case, you're just there, you're at the beach, you get a notification that somebody had somehow, I mean, right, like, they found your sales page, they read over words that you wrote a while ago. And they're like, yes, I can be helped by this product, and they buy it, and you weren't actively involved in getting that person there. And once they bought, they got the book, meaning you didn't need to go and do any work or do any, like, you know, the fulfillment was complete at that point, right?
Oh yeah, but actually, so in this case, right? So I hadn't written the book yet. So uh-huh. First thing I did, of course, is
you didn't have a book. Okay, got it.
So at first I was like, yeah, oh my God, it's possible.
It's like, now I got to write it.
Exactly. So I emailed this person like, yeah, no, we're upgrading the book. You could get your money back or I could send it to you in 2 months. And that's what I did. So I put the landing page. I think I actually paused it. And then I really started diving deep. So began reading about what the interesting people in the content space were doing.
Uh-huh.
Usually inspired by Tim Ferriss and Nathan Barry, whom uh-huh. I'm sure you know.
Oh yeah, he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, totally. And Authority is an amazing book on how to become an authority in a space.
Yep.
And that really helped me figure out, like, okay, so if I want to be credible selling this book, what I didn't want was for people to just search on Google for SoundCloud and find a book and then buy it off a sales page. Instead, what I thought would be much better if people know that I'm the go-to guy because I run a label, manage artists, and I have something valuable to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they read the articles, then of course they buy a book.
Right. The focus of this podcast is on all things freelancing and consulting. I know that's a part of what you do, right? Like you, with the labels you represent and everything, there's, I don't know if it's bundled or if it's something you sell separately, but can you tell me a bit about the kind of consulting that you and your team do now?
Sure, absolutely. So I think consulting in the music industry style would be very much called management. So basically, we represent a number of artists, and we do that on a commission basis, typically on, say, yearly or two-yearly contracts. And that's on the label and the management side. And then me personally, I also do consultancy, so for artists or for businesses, although I'm trying to phase that out to move towards whatever is more scalable. And I think the way we managed to get started doing that is by investing very heavily in a few artists that we believed in. With investing, I mean that we found a few artists that we thought had a lot of potential, and we were able to discover them, and we put a lot of time and effort into working with them before they were returning on our investment. And that led to the trust that allowed us to sign those deals, which then led to much bigger returns because we were able to develop careers for them.
Sure, sure. I mean, how though has the book, has maybe even the course, has that basically helped people like you, or has that helped you acquire the kind of, in this case, you know, artists that you're looking to have on your label?
100%. I think in any case, people take you so much more seriously if you have offered a book.
Uh-huh.
Even the simple fact of having a blog.
Even if it's not for them or directly for them.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because, you know, it's one thing to say like, hey, I went to university, but this is a whole different thing to say I wrote a book. And especially because now that I named the book the SoundCloud Bible, and what I've established now is pretty much I've monopolized that market. So now I am the SoundCloud guy, which means that both for an artist management perspective, but also just one-off consultancy, it's much more credible.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not only that, it's not that you've just done the book. I mean, I looked at your site, you've got articles on SoundCloud, you've got articles on, you know, just all things that I think a musician, an artist would be interested. You have all these different things that have, you know, what I like to tell people is that what that stuff is doing is it's doing a lot of the selling for you, right? Like it's doing a lot of the initial mistrust somebody might have in working with you, you know, blindly, I guess, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, sure. You have the credentials all on paper. Yes. You, like you just mentioned, yeah, the right university degree, you should be able to do this, but that's the sort of stuff that is going to set you apart from really everyone else. Because if somebody has gone through your book and you taught them all this about SoundCloud, and somebody's gone through your blog and maybe taken your course or something like that, I mean, yes, that's some immediate revenue for you, like the book sale, the course sale, and so on. But at the end of the day, if they become a high value client of yours, I mean, it amplifies that customer value by so much more.
Definitely. And I think it's also a web that reinforces each other. Like, for example, the better the releases on the label do, or the management artists, the more credible I become as a writer, and vice versa. And I think what I really strive to do is that once I set out to write for my blog and really establish that, I found that there's a few topics that artists really struggle with. And I think this could be applied to everyone who's trying to establish themselves in a niche. Is that, you know, like, what are the primary struggles? So for musicians, it might be copyright, marketing, specifically how to reach out to blogs, specifically how to market yourself on SoundCloud, and how to find artist managers, for example.
Uh-huh.
And absolutely. Instead of writing like articles that say, here's the best 10 new gadgets, right? Or the best 10 new software tools. Instead, right. What I've done is I publish very rarely, maybe once every 2 months. But then every article I publish is at least 2,500 words.
Okay, so it's in-depth.
Usually around 4,000 or 5,000. And then what happens is that people are still referencing articles I wrote 3 years ago, and even our team, because it's just comprehensive. And I think that also very much changes the perspective someone has on what you're doing than instead of if I were writing 4 250-word blog posts a week.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the things you just mentioned is something that I'm so on board with. And that is, you know, with my own background, when I exited my agency and started a software product, PlanScope, that tool is a project management tool, right? So it's project management for an agency. So if you're an agency and you want to manage projects, well, you could use this tool. But I realized, and this is actually where a lot of the things I'm doing now, including this podcast, came from. I realized if I could help people holistically, you know, when it comes to, well, I can't manage a project if I can't get clients, or I can't manage a project if I can't write a proposal, or, you know, all these different things that are kind of like, you might initially think, well, that's beyond the scope of kind of what I'm focusing on. I think from like, maybe not from the like you serving them directly in that need, but by giving them help, by giving them information, by showing them that you know how to help them with their business as a whole, I think it really sets you apart. So like the example I might give would be, because a lot of the people listening are not, you know, they're not involved in music per se, but let's say they do, you know, let's say they do web design for restaurants, you know, my kind of the trite example I always give. Well, if you could write, create content, create, help grow your authority by writing about things like, I don't know, like maybe the software you could use to power your you know, how you calculate the bill and everything, right? Like, I don't know, I think it's, what is it called? Point of sale. Yeah. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, the reviews of like all these different point of sale companies, or maybe like, I don't know, just things that are not directly related to websites for restaurants, but are kind of things that restaurants would care about as a whole. You know, I've seen that work so well, just for not only having more kind of surface area on Google, right? Like more keyword combinations can bring you up when people are searching around the internet. But on top of that, it really shows that you don't just know how to build websites for restaurants in this case. Instead, you understand the restaurant business, which is, I think, so much more valuable.
Oh yes, absolutely. And I think also, and you probably propagate this as well, is that a lead, right? You should not look at that lead for just a single sale, but instead, what I think is a very good approach is to look at customer lifetime value. Like, okay, so if you get a lead by any means, right? Someone reading your blog, or maybe they opt in to apply for one of the services you offer, or maybe you do cold outreach and they show interest, then of course what you want to do is cultivate a relationship, whether that's through an email funnel or consistently publishing on social media or doing a great job on one service so that you could then service them in the future. I think really what you should be trying to do is build that flock of people who trust you on a particular topic, and therefore you become the go-to.
Yeah, and I mean, you can learn over time when you have that audience. You can learn about maybe new services you could offer, maybe new things you could, you know, you could really, I don't know, provide for, whether it be a more transactional product like a book or, you know, a course, or maybe just new blog posts or an actual first class service. Like, I mean, the thing that actually brought me to create Double Your Freelancing Rate was people were emailing my support channel for my project management tool and asking about how they should price. So It wasn't like I wasn't just sitting I wasn't just sitting around thinking like I should do a book on this. And I'm sure with you, I mean, granted, your validation was not having the book and just putting up like the here's the pain that somebody might have and here's the solution. And then when sales started happening, then actually producing the book, which is one way to do it too. But when you already had that audience, like if you already had people who looked at you as an authority when it came to SoundCloud or you know, marketing for kind of artists or something like that, you probably would have been a little more comfortable writing that book, maybe even up front, if a lot of that would have already been happening, you know, in advance, if that makes sense.
100%. And I think another thing I recently realized is that not every offering is right for a specific user. For example, so I recently launched a course, and the course is at a very high price point. And of course, because the price point is high, like so my lowest tier is $400, so one-off purchase, my highest tier is $500 per year. Because that price point is so high, of course my conversion rate to my list is a lot smaller, but it's actually, that is like the core of my audience that had already consumed before, that has more money to spend. But therefore, what they're looking for in a product is also very different than maybe the 17-year-old music producer who's happy to just buy a book for $19, which is the pricing for the book package for the book, right? Without any bonuses.
I mean, it's especially helpful, I think, too, where let's say there's somebody who could end up hiring you to do, let's say, digital marketing for their band, but they don't even have a band yet. They don't even have any like people who actually care about their music yet, right? You can produce something that to them is, you know, more more affordable, like let's say a $30, $20 book. And it could be, the topic could be on something like, you know, how to get people to know about you. It's kind of like basically guerrilla marketing for new bands, like how to actually get people who like your music. And then from there, you kind of acquired them that way. And yes, you made some money off them now, but you can sell this to a lot more people than you can ever consult with individually. And then a percentage of these people are going to do so well from the advice you give them there.
Yeah, they'll come
they're going to then come and say, okay, I want to do this for real now, right? Which, I mean, I think it's important to understand if you really think about the kind of clients you serve. Like, let's say you serve startups and you build prototype MVPs for new startup companies. Well, you know, there's only a percentage of people who are going to have both the idea ready and the funding ready to hire somebody like you. But if instead you can become, and it doesn't need to be like, I think people think that you need to be like some worldwide expert on the subject. You just need to affect a few people. Like if you can have, let's say, an active blog or a book or a podcast or something that's about like, how do you actually go from like that idea you got in the shower to getting to the point where you're able to commit to raising money or something like that, right? I mean, obviously there's for every one person who can financially afford you and has the idea ready to afford you or to hire you, there's probably 10,000 who have some great idea, right? And they could potentially maybe be startup founders one day. But if you help them early on by not just, you know, not only helping them, but really building that relationship with them early on before they really are ready for you. By the time they are ready for you, I mean, they're not going to be shopping around. They're not going to be, they're going to want to work with you exclusively. So it sounds like one of the things you've been doing is kind of like go back in time to where somebody is before they're ready to maybe, you know, join your label or hire you as an agency or something. And instead look at them earlier on in more scalar ways, like blog articles or your book or the course or something like that, right?
Definitely. And I think for people starting out, of course, you might not have the full product offering, you know, like it's, I think a lot of people will not have a book or a course. But what you can definitely do is first figure out the pain point of your audience. Like, what are people struggling with? And I think if you don't have an audience, a big part of that is just looking at what are you struggling with yourself, you know, scratch your own itch. We were trying to do SoundCloud better, dust a book. And I think if you're consulting startups, for example, or you're trying to do marketing or you're web designing for, let's say, restaurants, right? Then, of course, restaurant owners, they struggle with doing the website. So then you might want to do a simple WordPress with a good team and design that. And then maybe once you have that, you can think about what annoys them. And maybe it's upkeep of the blog. So you could do maintenance and a content strategy. And then once you have that, maybe in the process, you'll build a little client base. And I think from there, it's like what I try to do is very much define their pain points by asking them. So, for example, one of the things I do is you opt into my newsletter or you get a lead magnet on my blog. In other words, I give away, say, a PDF in exchange for an email address. And they're entered into the email funnel. And one of the first things I ask them is, hey, please let me know, like, what are you struggling with? And then I compile all of that, and then regularly I look to that data to see what I'll write about, and then also to see what might be influential for me to start a product on.
Right. I do a lot of that. I do all these kind of both those initial opt-in things. One of the things I like doing too, and I don't know if you've tried this, is if you're going to do like an email course, have interactive worksheets where you have people like, you know, you submit, it's all I have, it's basically a gravity form that when they fill it out, they get a copy and I get a copy. And mine just goes to a label in my Gmail that I have. Actually, when an assistant who works for me, all she does is go through this and come up with trends and figure out like what are actual problems that people are having? What consensus, like what are the phrases that people keep saying again and again? And then she's dumping it all into a Google Doc. And and then for me, that's exactly it. Like, whether it's a new product or a new article or a podcast subject or something like that, I mean, you already have the, you know what I mean? You already have the, like, you don't need to scratch your head thinking, what should I create? What should I write about?
Absolutely. And you know, like if you begin with yourself and then fix your biggest struggle, and then after that, like what I found also worked very well is, so the new people on my list, I ask, what are you struggling with? But for the course, actually, the Music Marketing Academy, I went to solely the people who had gone through my emails, and my funnel takes about 2 months, who had gone through my funnel for a month and a half, or gone through it further. Like the people who were really committed and hadn't opted out. And I asked them, like, hey guys, so what are you struggling with? How can I help you? If there's something you could ask me, what would you ask me? How do you struggle with music marketing? What is your biggest pain point there? And then I also offered them a set of options and what they would like me to do. So I asked them, would you like me to start a podcast? Would you like me to start a paid exclusive mastermind group? Or would you like a video course?
Is that an individual discussion, or do you do that kind of automatically where you just, you know, you throw out some options? And because one of the things I've done is always, you know, I collect a lot of data, and then I'll follow up sometimes with people who responded saying, because the thing is, like, I'm not a big fan, honestly, I'm not a big fan of letting the customer dictate the format, right? Like, I don't think people want a book. I don't think people want a course. I don't think people want a podcast. They want results, mm-hmm. right? So
yes. Okay.
I think it's up to us to figure out, like, how do we actually package it in the best way? Like, I mean, obviously, if you're doing a thing on ballroom dancing, teaching people how to do that, it's going to be more video-based than text, right? But if it's more of a framework for pricing, like what I have in one of my courses, it's more textual because it just makes more sense to read that than a video thing would be.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
So the way I did it is this. So initially, I hadn't put this in my funnel, but then I figured out, like, okay, I can ask my more dedicated readers what they are struggling with the most and how they would like my help, right? And I also asked them about the format. And I partially agree with you that people don't know what they want until they get it. But it did give me a good indication. And what actually happened is, okay, so I did that once, and then I integrated it into my funnel. But the funny thing was, the people who were on my blog list, and those are not existing customers, so they hadn't bought the book, they said, like, hey, okay, yeah, super interesting. Not sure if I'll buy a course. I'd love to get a podcast, right? Or it's going to be too expensive. Whereas the people who had actually bought the book, 80% of them said, yeah, I want the video course.
Right, right. I mean, did you just say video course, podcast, book? Or did you say a video course that'll help you do this, or a book that will teach you this, or a podcast that will interview people who are experts?
So it was like a one sentence. So okay. Pretty elaborate. Right, so exclusive mastermind with monthly calls where you would talk to me,
okay.
And such.
Okay.
So what I've done now is, now that I've integrated it into the funnel, and I got this from Jeff Walker. I'm sure you know, like, the product launch formula.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I haven't gone through his stuff, but I know him or know his.
Yeah. There's some fundamentals in there which are very good, and one of the things that I got from his book was that you can use a survey, like asking people for what they need, also as a way to entice them for what you're going to offer later. So what actually happens is that the people who get sent my survey, where I collect this data now, and it's automated, after they deliver that survey, I put them in a separate email funnel, which then upsells them to the course. So the people who are on the blog, I ask these questions and I upsell to the book. And then the people who've bought the book, I then ask them more questions, and then I upsell them to the course. And the first time I did that, their answers were actually driving the creation of the product. Like, yeah. What they told me was what drove it.
Right, right. Which is the best way to do it, because your product's then responding to a direct and vocal problem, not just something you develop in a vacuum, which we all know is the downfall of many technically correct products, like either software products or books or whatever, that were by all intents complete and well done, but they're not actually helping anybody because they weren't done. They weren't precipitated by people actually saying, this is what I need.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's so easy to fall into escalated commitment when you really love an idea, but you're afraid to really test it, or
absolutely,
you just don't do it.
One of the things you mentioned earlier, which is the, you know, tackle that thing you're passionate about. That's one of the things I'm always, like, a little hesitant to really fully agree with sometimes, because, you know, it's one of those things where, well, I don't think any, you know, I've had so many bad product ideas that I'm glad I nipped because they would have failed, but they were things I was passionate about, right? Like case in point with my own stuff, I thought a lot, you know, I've have all this marketing know-how that I've learned over the years to build my business, whether it be marketing automation stuff or whatever. Maybe I could create a tool that would be make, you know, fill in a lot of the blanks that I have, or create a product that's on, like, you know, I don't know, helping startups get more users or something, right? But then I realize, first off, that's not my, maybe a fraction of my audience would be interested in that, but it's not something that's, you know, holistically, or it's not something that the majority of my audience would care about or need. You get tempted by these great ideas. And I think the same is true of consulting, especially where, because it's, you don't really, like with a software product, you need to build it. But with consulting, you can say tomorrow I'm going to start doing this or that, but if you don't have that validation in place, you know, if you don't really know that there's that need for it, well, you know?
Yeah. And it often also becomes an excuse. Like I totally hear what you're saying, right? And this happens a lot with artists, for example, where they're so passionate about something, but then they don't want to market because they think it's selling out. And I think a lot of people take, hey, I'm chasing my passion, I'm doing what I love. I think they take that as a consideration because that's the culture now, right? Like, hey, we want to do what we love. And then I fully agree with you on what you were saying, that the one does not always imply that that's something the market needs. So I think you got to look for the intersection of, okay, what can I do that is an extension of my passions, what I love, what I believe in, etc. But how can I do that in a way so that it actually creates value for people?
Right, right.
And I think that's really the thing. And for example, how I look at that, and I was really confronted with this when I was considering how to formulate my content strategy for the blog. And Nathan's book was great on this, Authority, was that he really hammered the principle of, okay, so it's not about me writing per se what I want to say, as it's about me taking what I know and turning it into a format where it's actually valuable to people. So instead of me complaining about how the music industry is changing, right, or how much I love SoundCloud, instead what I should do is write an article about, hey, how can you improve your SoundCloud game?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so, and I think people need to be reminded of doing that.
I'm always just concerned that people are going to listen to this and not really know fully kind of what the next step could be for them, right? And I think a lot of people might get overwhelmed with, like, well, you know, books and courses and podcasts, and blogs and all this stuff. And so what I'm always looking for is, like, what would you say that if somebody is listening and they have no audience whatsoever? And actually, in the last episode, I talked a bit about this where the guest and I talked about, well, you could reach out to your past clients. You could reach out to your direct audit network you already have and say, hey, I'm starting a new email course, could I add you to it? Or is it, you know, something like that, right? I mean, that I think is a great way. But I mean, from your perspective, what do you think should be the first few steps that somebody takes, you know, if they're looking to kind of augment their consulting, or at least streamline their consulting by having additional products?
Absolutely. Oh, I love this question. So I think firstly, what I would do, if you have no audience, right? I think I would sit down, take some time, and then ask myself, what do I believe or what can I do that could work very well or that's super important that very few people do? I think that will be a tough question to answer, but it will also show you where your convictions might be original. I think that's one thing you could do. I think another thing that you could do is really think about, okay, what do I know a lot about, and then what are my pain points there? For example, let's say you're a consultant, right? Or you're a web designer. What can you do with those skills that would solve a problem for someone that you think is recurring frequently? And then you need to figure out an actionable way to tap those, right? I think the restaurant web design example is very, very good. And also, maybe you've heard of Charlie Hun.
He's in Austin, right? Yeah, he...
Yeah.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who know him. I don't know him personally, though.
Okay, so he has a story in his book, Recession Proof Graduate, which I think is actually available for free on his site. And I think it's great what he's done. So basically what he figured out is, okay, so I'm good at video and I would like to be a public speaker and a writer at some point. So what he did is he thought about, okay, who are the best people I could potentially work for me to create leverage, even if I haven't worked for anyone before, right? So he pinpointed Tim Ferriss and Ramit Sethi. And then he took a good look at them and he started with Ramit Sethi. And he found out by just looking at the blog, right, and seeing what Ramit was doing, that he was trying to get more paid speaking gigs. And then he thought about, okay, so how would one go about getting paid speaking gigs? Well, it might be good to have a highlight reel. So then Charlie thinks, okay, so I'm a good video editor. Why don't I take a collection? I go through all Ramit's video content that's on YouTube, and I just make a compilation without having him ask for it beforehand. And he just sent him an email like, hey, Ramit, I'm Charlie. I'm doing this and this. I love your content. I made this this free, no strings attached video for you that you could use to score more paid speaking gigs. And I would love to know what you think. And I don't want to get paid for this, but I would love to work together with you more. Maybe one of my next assignments, if you like, this could be paid. Thanks a lot. And don't worry about it if you don't have the time to get back to me. And he used that, an intern, like Ramit loved it, right? So they started working together. And then he was able to take that to start building an audience himself, because then he had the credibility. Instead of being able to say, hey, I offered a book, he was then working for Ramit Sethi. And in other words, to summarize that, it would be look for a place where you could do something that makes a difference, and then maybe you should try and make that difference before even asking whether you could do that. Just pinpoint for a business or for an individual, like, hey, how could you help them and do that? And maybe the assumption should be that you do that 10 times. Maybe 9 times people won't respond, but maybe the 10th time you'll get a bite. And that will be your point of entry.
Mm-hmm. And actually, in the course I was telling you about that I just launched, or finished launching last night, one of the concepts that I teach about in it is called the study of like a Trojan horse tactic for generating leads. And that is doing something like that, offering, like, one of the things we used to do is you could go to a website and basically do a screen recording where you basically point out all the like things that could be done differently to increase sales, right? And then,
like, Derek Halpern style.
So the only issue I have with like the example of Charlie Hone with Ramit or the website teardown is you end up doing like a lot of work for no guaranteed return, which to me, there's always a lot of risk in doing that. But one thing that we did pretty well was, which doesn't require a lot of work at all, is something like, let's say you decide, you live in The Hague. Let's say you decide to profile a lot of local businesses and talk about like the cool things they're doing, or maybe not local, but just wherever businesses that are kind of in your target audience. You could go and say, hey, would you mind if I maybe interview some, you know, you and maybe the, you know, if they're not the owner too, maybe, you know, just talk about kind of the things that your business is doing, you know, how you're growing and so on. Basically position yourself almost like a journalist, right? Where you're going to then go and share with your audience kind of like almost like a case study in a way, even though they're not a client of yours, a case study of a particular business. And this will, I mean, most businesses will be okay with this because you're going to give them exposure and everyone wants exposure. But on top of that, it's a great way to kind of get yourself in the door, get to know a higher up at the business so that maybe in the future, if you do want to maybe either work at converting them to a client or use them to be a referral source or, you know, a testimony or whatnot. I mean, it's a great way to kind of do that. And, you know, you don't need to do a lot of upfront work. You basically send a canned email. And if they respond positively, then you do the actual work.
Oh, yeah. I like that. And I think, you know, with the example of Charlie Hone, that would only be for your single point of entry, right? Like, once you've done that, then you take it. And then, of course, you don't need to do a lot of work for free anymore. Because then you could show, like, hey, I did this.
Exactly. And it's not something, I mean, what I want to caution listeners is, I don't think either of us would say you want to be doing this 5 years from now. It's more of a way to kind of seed and start that audience, which once you start doing things correctly, you can then start to have that audience be more or less, you know, kind of grow on its own in a lot of different ways, whether it be through paid marketing, different viral things, you know, really smart opt-ins on your site, you know, things like that. But this is a great way, I think, to seed that and to start it.
Yes. And for the people who are building an audience or who have an audience, I think the one thing I would advise is make sure you integrate an automated way to ask them what they're struggling with, because that will be the source of inspiration for your best work, the best products, the best articles, because then you're really feeling the market, you know?
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I had to process the list. No, I agree. If this is your first episode or you've listened to the podcast for a while, the common thing, the theme that I think you're going to be able to extrapolate is that the most successful consultants, the most successful freelancers, don't just look for that immediate sale. You know, we don't just go and we don't talk to somebody only if we think that they're going to turn out to be a new client tomorrow. And I think that's the approach that a lot of newer freelancers take, which is like, if I go to an event, if I don't have any hope that this person I'm talking with will become a client by the end of the night, I'm not going to keep talking with him or her. Or if I have people on my email list and they're not turning into clients, or people who are paying me like a lot of money for individual consulting, something's wrong. Maybe that means then that, like what we've been kind of hinting at, maybe things like coming up with more lower risk, more less expensive products that help, at least now they're a customer, now they're a client, you can then kind of help, you can help them grow in a way before, until they're ready to become a full-fledged client of yours. I'd love to, you know, as we close, I'd love to get your kind of final thoughts on this. But I think taking a long approach to sales and marketing is the best way to do this. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of creative freelancers, for instance, have a very short approach. You know, they go to job boards, they go and they expect that people are going to be lead today, client tomorrow. And instead of thinking like, I'm going to influence a lot of people at once and affect a lot of people at once and then kind of move them up the chain to becoming a client, I think that's the big, in my mind, the big distinction.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I think with digital and the possibilities with content marketing out there, you would be stupid not to play the long game. You know, figure out what you're good at. Make sure you're known as the guy or the girl that's good at that. And start creating value for your leads, for your customers, your soon-to-be customers, people you hope that will be customers. And maybe the best way to look at it would not be talking to someone at a conference and hope that you could then upsell them to do consultancy. Maybe the best way to look at it would be to go to a conference and to be valuable to everyone you speak to. How can you help them? And then if you deliver value, you're going to be the person people go to if they need something.
Booty, this has been great. Really, really enjoyed our talk today. Where can people find out more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, so firstly, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. And I think you're doing a lot of cool stuff. So it's an honor.
Happy to have had you join. best website for you is BUDIVOOGT.com?
Yeah, so people can find me at my blog, so bootyvoogd.com. And our record label, Heroic, over at Heroic Recordings. And for people, it may be interesting just to take a look at how I've set up the site with pop-ups and lead magnets, and maybe take some inspiration from there.
Cool. Well, thank you again for coming on the show. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
Totally. Appreciate it.
All right, if you haven't left a review yet, I'm talking to you. If you already have, you can go ahead and skip to the next episode or whatever else. I would love it if you could head over to iTunes. If you actually just go to doubleyourfreelancing.com/podcast, we've got a link directly to the iTunes page, I guess, of the podcast. But, you know, I'm always trying to bring on amazing guests. We've got some amazing people in the pipeline that I'm going to be sharing with you. And I really try to make this a way to, you know, I try to keep these interviews conversational. They're not like the structured questions that I ask of everyone. And, you know, I don't try to make these discussions almost like, you know, some podcasts in my mind are very, it's like going through a factory. Like everyone is the same in terms of
questions asked and all that kind of stuff. You know, what I tell every interviewee beforehand is, imagine you and I are at a conference and we're having a drink. What would we, if we wanted to talk shop, what would we say? And, you know, each interview I try to make like that. I try to make it like you are listening on a conversation with, really two people who are really passionate about freelancing and consulting. So if you could go over to iTunes or go to Stitcher and leave a review, I would really appreciate it. I have this new notification thing. I think I mentioned a few episodes back. Emails me whenever I get a review. I'm always super excited to see that. So thank you for that in advance. And we'll see you next time for another episode of The Business of Freelancing.